Welcome to Career Buzz, Canada's unique radio conversation that empowers lives, enriches careers, and energizes organizations. Today on your show, get your story straight and write your career. Hi, I'm Mark Franklin, practice leader of Career Cycles, a career management social enterprise. I'm pleased to be your host today on Career Buzz. Thanks for tuning in this morning, and a special welcome to members of the Association of Career Professionals International, tuning in on the internet around the globe. Today's Career Buzz guests are experts in narratives at work and writing as a transformative tool for career management. They'll share highlights of their transformation through writing model and talk about career dialogues, narrative writing courses, and career identity. Professor Frans Meyers is a top researcher in the area of career guidance in the Netherlands. He's professor at the University of The Hague. Professor Meyers speaks about the importance of personal development and fostering passion in career learning. His research shows that career learning takes place as a result of experiential learning and a dialogue about those experiences. This finding has led Professor Meyers to develop professional training programs for teachers in how to have true career conversations. Reineke Lengel is a writer, poet, and visiting graduate professor at Athabasca University in Alberta. She designs and teaches graduate courses in the area of writing for personal and professional development. She's co-author of Narratives at Work with Frans Meyers, which was recently published in the British Journal of Career Guidance and Counseling. Reineke Lengel and Frans Meyers both join me live by telephone from Edmonton. Welcome to the show.
Hello, Mark.
Thank you.
Good morning, and thanks for getting up extra early there. You're a couple hours behind us here in Toronto. Reineke, what do you like about your career these days?
Oh, there's lots to like. It's very inspirational to work with people and their stories, whether it's career stories, life stories. So I get up every morning enjoying my work very much.
And what do you do? I know you have a company there, and this is Black Tulip Press, and on that site, there's so many different things that it looks like you're up to. You're writing, you're teaching, you're developing courses. So what's the range of things that actually make up your career these days?
Well, I'm a poet at heart, but I always say, and I've often said that my career sort of stands on two legs, and the legs are writing, and the other leg is teaching. And I've sort of been able to combine those two things and share my inspiration with students. So I write my own work. I've written, you know, fiction. I've written plays, poetry. And so I kind of do the whole range, and nonfiction as well. And now some of the academic writing that we're doing. And those are the things that I bring to the work with students as well. So they're doing that type of writing as well for self-exploration and personal development.
And Frans Meyers, what do you like about all the elements that make up your career?
Oh, I'm not such an exciting life as Reineke has. I'm a researcher. I've worked always at university, then quit, started my own company, and then after a couple of years, I went back to the university because I really love to do research. And then you need a little bit of a bigger organization. So I'm a researcher, an academic.
And all the things that you're doing these days, it's some research, some teaching. What's the split between those pieces, and is there anything else that makes up your career?
Oh, yes. I'm doing teaching, and I'm doing research, and I'm a passionate singer. That's also. But so my real passion, perhaps, is singing and finding my way through life by singing. But the most important thing for me is developing courses for teachers and developing strong learning environments for students so that they really can enter the labor market in a way that they are adequately prepared for that.
Let's you both have such interesting areas of work, and I wanna delve into that further, but let's get a little bit of your backstory and how you got to where you are right now. Reineke, to start with you, you're doing all these things you've just described to us. How did you get started in this?
Well, I always liked writing, even, you know, since I was a child, and I was stimulated to write. Just my family was very supportive of writing. And I always was interested in holistic health as well, and at home there was always a conversation about health and well-being. So I was stimulated, you know, really early on, and I just loved to be creative, and so that's that's sort of how I got into the work. Loving people, I think, is a big part of it as well.
And what was a key turning point that might have happened in your career that really moved you forward into something that you're really liking?
Well, I was always writing, and I was teaching some evening courses, and then a job came up at the University of Alberta to be a poet at the bedside working with hospital patients. And I think that's the point at which I could say I became a professional, where I was asked to use poetry with patients and tell their life stories, you know, listen to their life stories and write about them, mostly in poetry. And we did other art projects as well. So that's when it came alive on the professional front.
How interesting. A poet at the bedside. Now, that's not a job description or a job posting that many people see posted on a job board. How did that job come about?
What happened was one of my students from the evening course worked for the Writers Guild, and she'd heard that a position like that was coming up, and she said I recommended you for it. So they phoned me up. I happened to be in Amsterdam at the time, and they phoned me up and described the job of working with patients at the bedside, and they said, "Do you think you'd be interested to come for an interview?" And I said, "I'm not going to play hard to get. I think that job is made for me."
Amazing. And then what led to these courses? You're now teaching at Athabasca University. What led to that?
I was teaching the evening courses, and again, one of my students who was an editor at Athabasca University said, "You know, I'm enjoying this course so much," and she said to her boss, who later became my boss, "You know, Mike, we should really you should really get Ryan to come maybe to design one of the courses for Mays." And so he looked at what I was doing. And so I met with him, and he said, "You know, could you design a course for us for the graduate program in what you do?" And I said, "Do you want it to be focused on narratives and healthcare? Do you want it to be focused on writing and healing? You know, what is it you're interested in?" He said, "Do what you do." And it was amazing that I got that amount of freedom too. And it's a very popular course with our program, with the MAIS program.
That's a great story. Do what you do. What an endorsement of the kinds of things you were doing. And I guess the key thing there was that the student, when you were teaching, it was the student who endorsed you, and that's what led to the confidence in the next employer, Athabasca University, to give you that freedom.
Yes, that's how it was, yeah.
Great story. And Franz Myers, on your end, you've been within the academy, you've had a career, you said you stepped away from it for a while to run your own business and then came back. How far back in your personal story does the idea of an academic career go for you?
Oh, no, you can better ask me how about my work around career guidance is how to better biographically, because my parents both have only primary education, and I ended up, all my brothers did vocational education and my sisters too, but I ended up in university. But every step of that road, it was a big mystery for me, and I've always, when I entered a new education, the first thing I thought of was what is happening here, and what are the rules, and what are the rules of the game here, and how do they play it. And I missed somebody who could give me some advice, or at least could explain to me what was happening there and what were the rules of the game. So I think my interest in careers guidance and career development is highly autobiographical and highly, induced by all the missing help I experienced in my own life.
That's so interesting. It comes from that perspective of giving what you most need to receive.
And, oh, yes.
and there you needed to receive
that's
that.
What most people do, I think.
And just that one piece that you told us a moment ago about the stepping away from the university to run your own business and coming back, what was the key turning point there that led in both stepping into it and back?
That universities, I don't know how it is here in Canada, but in the Netherlands, universities made a switch from a more society-oriented approach to a real, real, real scientific approach, and that meant that the only thing that was, that was valued in university was that you published in international journals, and international means here U.S. journals, and so I didn't like that. Of course, I published in international journals, but for me, education has to serve a bigger goal. It's a means to another end. So I always worked in university with one leg in the academic and the other leg in society. So I really want to solve problems. And so when the whole culture of the university changed to a very severe publish or perish culture, I thought, no, this is not the environment for me. So I stepped away. I started my own business. I was very successful in it. But what I told you earlier, I really am a researcher. I want to know how things work and how complicated things are. So I really love to do research. And to do that, you need a bigger organization, because when you are a small business, it's almost impossible to do so. So I went back, but I am a lucky guy now. I work 2 days a week at the university, and I always say 4 days a week I work in my own company.
And what is the business? What was the company?
Oh, it's exactly the same. It's all about career development, career learning. So I do exactly the same at university as I do in my own business. But in my own business, it's about solving problems. And in the university, it's about understanding problems.
Nice. We're talking here to Reineke Lengel and Franz Myers. They're both talking to us from Edmonton, Alberta, and both researchers and practitioners in the area of career development, and especially around narratives at work. Here on CIUT, Career Buzz on CIUT, I'm your host, Mark Franklin, 89.5 FM in Toronto, and worldwide, CIUT.FM. Listeners, also, if you have questions or comments as we speak through the next part of the conversation here, please give us a call or email. I'll give you the phone numbers as questions come up. Please give us a call. We'll bring you in to respond. The phone numbers are 416-946-7000. That's 416-946-7000. And I'll also be checking email, and you can email me right here in the studio, and I'll bring your comments or questions to the air. And that's Mark with a K, Mark at careercycles.com, Mark at careercycles.com, or 416-946-7000, and join us with your comments or questions. Now, Reineke, I want to start talking to you a little bit more about the courses you've been teaching at Athabasca, especially around career, personal and professional development, and you've got this transformation through writing model that seems really interesting. So let me get started by that, first of all, by a quote here that you have about the stories that we tell ourselves. And there's something here about the stories we tell ourselves about our particular situation, which determines how we are able to cope and navigate our world. What do you mean by the quality of the story we tell ourselves?
Well, I'll just talk about the model in that. What happens is, you know, life happens to us. And so often we have some kind of boundary experience happen, which is when we can no longer depend on the coping mechanisms and identifications that we used to have. So, for instance, we suddenly become unemployed, and it's a shock to our system. And so the first story we tell as human beings about that is, oh, my God, this is bad, sad. This is terrible. And then if we keep telling ourselves that narrative, then we get stuck there. So that's what I call a first story. And so usually our response is there to either fight, flight, or to freeze. And so that's not a quality narrative. That's not the kind of narrative that's going to be able to make us available and open to even find a new job, to develop a new new ideas about where we might go in the future.
I saw that in the model, and it's a fascinating model, and I'll put a link to it on our website later so that people can see this graphical model. But you do say that this boundary experience, the situation event or attitude, leads to the first story. You have this thing, stuck or suffering, SOS. Does it always have to be one of these stuck or suffering problems or boundary experiences in terms of bringing people into this conversation? Can it be more of a kind of a developmental thing, something that people do because they realize they want to move forward? Or is it always, is the entry point always one of these boundary experiences?
Well, you know, a boundary experience can even be somebody insulting you, you know, or you feeling insulted by something somebody says. So it doesn't have to be a huge crisis like becoming unemployed. It can be something small that triggers you. But I think as human beings, sort of what Franz and I have found in our work and personally too, is that we often don't learn until we're motivated to learn by something that we consider negative.
Right. So there's something there that triggers it, often a negative. It might be a catastrophic or seemingly catastrophic event, like somebody who loses their job and doesn't want to lose their job. Or it could be a smaller moment where you have a realization, oh, things aren't quite right here, and I want to make a change. So,
sure, it can, yeah, a boundary experience might be somebody, for instance, feeling that their job is like a dead end, and it's a fine job, and maybe it pays well, but they're frankly feeling numbed out and bored, and in a sense, in a quiet desperation, as Thoreau would say.
Right. Now, most people in that situation simply start job searching, you know, like fix my resume, start job searching. They don't really reflect and think, what's the problem here? What do I want to do about it? You know, and so everybody is kind of racing off with this, you know, semi-clear idea of what it is that they should do about this situation. You have an alternative approach. What is that?
Yeah, that's it's really well said, because I explained about the models that sometimes people want to jump from a first story to a second story. They want to jump from, okay, this is bad, this is sad, to, okay, I'm going to, you know, lift myself up by my own hair and get myself through this, and I'm just going to get, you know, the next job. I'm going to find, you know, I'm going to start trawling the internet and et cetera. But it doesn't really work that way. At least it doesn't leave us receptive to the possibilities of our lives or even of the labor market. So the alternative that we suggest is that there's more room to spend in feeling, even negative feeling. There's more time to explore life themes. So one of the things I say poetically is sort of like, actually Rumi says it this way, when inward tenderness finds the secret hurt, pain itself will crack the rock, and let the soul emerge. So what I mean by that is, when we have a painful experience in the boundary experience, we have that first story, and if we immediately try to get to the happy place of solving it, we miss out on the pain that could actually crack open more of our potential.
So that's scary. You know, I completely hear you, you know, and we have a career management practice and we speak to people all the time. And it's scary for people. You know, they want to jump to the second story. Happiness is a theme. Everybody's talking about how to be more happy. And here you are saying, gee, it might be actually helpful to descend into the pain, because something great might emerge. How do you conquer the fear? How do you take people into this process so that they can do so without getting scared?
Yeah, I think that's such an important question, because you can't be left alone, you know. Barbara Scherer, the career expert, she says, you know, isolation is the dream killer.
Yes.
And it's so true, and I think what it is it's that guidance. It's that step by step you lead people through. So there has to be, in a sense, a witness. Like me as a professor, I'm actually a witness to stories that students tell. And I'll encourage them. Like, somebody might feel start off with quite a superficial story, and I might say, okay, well, how about you do some writing to explore the theme that you mentioned here? Where somebody else who goes, you know, I'm getting scared, I've gone really deep, and I'm getting scared, I might say, okay, I won't, you know, pull back a bit. And so you can really go at your own pace. But I think it's so important to have a guide by the side. You need to create what, you know, Winnicott calls the safe container.
Right. So in that safe container, you've identified these four steps to move through from the first story toward the second story. Can you just briefly describe what are those steps?
Yeah, they're based on Piaget's learning model. So they're sensing, sifting, focusing, understanding. And, I mean, it kind of sounds linear, but it doesn't necessarily always go in that order. But sensing, the first step, is just to get things out on the page. So that includes the feelings, even the ones that are kind of taboo. So, for instance, say you've been, you know, you suddenly lose your job, but there's also a little voice inside you that says, I'm actually kind of glad I lost my job, even though, you know, you have the bills looming and all that. Or that you realize that you're really a lot more scared than you realized you could be, and you feel some shame around that type of thing. So sensing gives us an opportunity to write all our thoughts and feelings down and sort of create a map of where we're at.
Yes.
Put it all on the table, you know.
And is that best done by writing, or, you know, can this also come out in an effective career conversation or an effective helping conversation to get all of that out, to give people a chance to express it?
Yes. Oh, you know, I think that's very possible. I think one of the things that we've been speaking about is, what can writing offer? Because sometimes we don't have the finances or the connections to actually talk to a career guidance counselor, and it's very labor intensive. Hour by hour to speak to somebody like that. So writing might help in that way to be cost effective as well. So, but the dialogue is also part of this model. It's wanted to mention that, that in the middle of the model, you can see the diagram where there's the dialogue with self and others. So as you're moving through sensing and sifting, focusing, understanding, there is a dialogue with others as well. So it might be me, the professor. It might be a poem written by somebody, an author who died 300 years ago. You know, that could be part of the dialogue too.
Right. So that's the first part, the sensing, get it out on paper. Then there's the sifting. What happens there?
Sifting, you start to sort of see bigger themes emerge, but it's still not connected, and you look at causality, sort of like, okay, well, it's interesting that this should happen. Maybe it happened because before I neglected to network at work so much, and now I realize that maybe part of the reason that I'm actually being forced to move on in a different position is that I missed that step. So there's some sort of sense of, okay, A led to B. Is that possible? So you're almost playing around with the theory.
Yes.
On what has happened.
And then from that sifting, then there's a move towards a more focused approach, or focusing, as you've called it.
Yeah, so that's where actual viewpoints emerge. And, parts of the new perspectives appear. So they're not sewn together yet, but they're sort of the threads that eventually become part of your second story.
Right, and then the last stage you've called understanding, is that where we start to really get a handle on what's happened, or start to get some clarity about what we like or don't like and want to move forward?
Yeah, that's right. That's when those pieces of the story sort of weave together and they seep into the second story. So in our case study that's in the article as well, there was a case study of a woman who became unemployed. She took the course and spoke about how eventually started weaving a new story. And one of the parts of her, she became unemployed suddenly, and one of the parts of her new story was, this is an opportunity. I didn't realize that this crisis is really an opportunity.
Right. Or as another Canadian researcher here had an article about job loss, and she called it a blessing in disguise, Jelena Žikić. And she's been talking to people who have lost their jobs, and at first they have this really negative reaction to it.
Yeah.
And then as time emerges through some process, and she writes about some other process, that people come to see these moments as so-called blessings in disguise.
Yeah, but you do really need to be engaged with your feelings and emotions to be able to come to that point. You cannot rationalize that. You cannot jump to that second story and say, oh, well, this is an opportunity.
Right. Well, but then it's back to that idea of what people want to do. They want to jump to that second story without dealing with it in some kind of procedural process way here that you've described.
That's right.
We're talking here to Reinicke Langel and also Franz Myers about career dialogues and career conversations, and also writing as a transformative approach. I'm your host here, Mark Franklin, on Career Buzz on CIUT 89.5 FM in Toronto and worldwide at CIUT.fm. We've just talked about this four-step model. If listeners do have comments or questions about it, please give us a call. You can do so in the Toronto area at 416-946-7000, or you can email me, Mark, with a K, at careercycles.com. So, Reinicke, the second story, can you give us an example of what you mean by this second story in the model?
Well, the second story is either a shift in perspective, so you don't see the situation the same way as you did before, just as we were just mentioning about the job loss, or there's a deep acceptance. And when I say deep, I mean it's a really felt acceptance. It's felt in your gut, not only in your head. So, it is what it is. And the other one is to find meaning in it. So, for instance, if you, my student who went through, we had the case study about, she ended up writing a book, or her final project ended up being a book for other people who became unemployed. So she found meaning in the event to even share it as a gift to others.
Now, Franz Myers, you've been involved with this as well. In fact, you've co-authored this paper. What's your perspective on this, especially around the dialogue? It's going to foreshadow our conversation later about career dialogues. But what can you add to that conversation, especially around the dialogue part of this model?
Well, a lot, of course. But I was listening to your conversation. I think, what people have to know is that human beings have a brain that is capable of reflecting on itself. We can say I and me, but on the other hand, all the older parts of our brain refuse to do so. So they are developed to avoid anxiety and to avoid insecurity. So that's exactly the reason why people, when they are hit by a boundary experience, try immediately to restore their old lives and to stick into the first story. So, but we as the only part of nature, human beings can think about themselves, but they don't like to do so. So they have to be helped to withstand their natural drive to stick into their first story, to stick into their comfort zone. And what people need is another person, and it can be a real person, a live person, and it can be a poet or a writer or a thinker who already died centuries ago, but they need somebody who helps them to find the right words, first of all, to express what they feel and how they are hurted and how they feel to be out of the comfort zone, and then step by step help them to find the words to create a new meaningful second story. And most of the time that goes in three steps. Most of the time when people are out of their comfort zone, first of all, emotions dominate, and what you need then is help to find words to create metaphors. That's the reason why people who never read any poetry, but as soon as somebody dies or something awful, terrible happens,
yes,
then that people go back to song text or to poetry. So the first thing you do is create metaphors. And then secondly, we can help people to create an analogy. An analogy, yes. So it's already a story. It's a fairy tale or something like that. Huh? So it's create a story, but not a story about you specifically, but in a more general sense. And then after you got from metaphors to analogies, then and not earlier, then you can come to some sort of a personal theory that fits into your own life story. So dialogue has to be poetic as well as theoretically founded. So dialogue isn't easy, and to help people to find their way from the first story to the second story isn't easy, and it requires that you are open for really the feelings of that other person. And I always say to my students and to teachers, helping people to get from the first story to the second one, it needs that you are able to give your student or to give your client really the words with love. You really have to feel what another person feels, because when you don't feel that, you aren't able to help them. So dialogue is not only about words, it's about poetic words, it's about fairy tales, it's about images, and only in the last part it's about a theory, it's about causality.
Nice. It's good to hear both pieces of the puzzle that you're sharing here, both the power and the importance of the observer, or the person who's going to help facilitate that conversation, and then those steps, metaphor, analogy, and then the new story. In fact, we've had a guest here on Career Buzz, a well-known Canadian career professional and professor, Norm Amundsen, who speaks and writes a lot about the use of metaphor, especially to help us move from our first story to our second. Franz, just before we break, and we're going to break for music in about a minute, but can you give us one example, maybe from a client or from some of your research, that would at least give us the idea of the metaphor? What do you mean? Can you give us an example of what you mean by metaphor?
Oh, when a student of mine was really, he came back from a placement and he had a feeling that it didn't work well, and he had only a vague, diffuse feeling. And then I started to say, and then of course he immediately decided that he don't want to be in that occupation and immediately want to be happy again. And so I said, no, stick to your feeling and please describe what you are feeling. Because normally the teacher says to students, well, give me the reasons, huh?
Yes.
Why don't you feel happy there? But that's absolutely not important. I said, describe the feeling. And what he did then was really go back to a metaphor, because to describe your feelings, you can't do that with a theory. You have to use metaphors. So suddenly he starts saying about feeling that his heart changed into a rock. And I said, well, that's a good starting point. Please tell me, how does that feel? What's happening then when your heart turns into a rock? And from there, we went on, and we created, how you say that now, we recreated the whole situation, what happened there, and so he could get access to much deeper levels of his own values. So, but staying with your feelings and forcing or inviting a student or a client to describe the feeling, it always starts down with a metaphor.
Yes. That's a great, great example. Thanks for sharing that. We're talking here to Franz Myers and Reineke Langel on Career Buzz. I'm your host, Mark Franklin, here on CIUT 89.5 FM in Toronto and worldwide on CIUT.FM. We're going to take a brief musical break and come right back to our conversation here and invite listeners with comments or questions. If you do have a comment or question over the break, please email mark@careercycles.com. We have a piece of music here from Leslie Feist from the album The Reminder. I picked a song that would really give us a kind of narrative angle on the discussions we're having. The song is Past in Present.
It's got a letter, is in black. that debit card up your schnoz.
I'm paying ATM fees through the nose.
Why don't you check the back, Jack?
Check what?
Check the back of your debit card for the exchange logo. Here, let me get that. See? You're already a member.
I had no idea.
The exchange is your ticket to no-fee withdrawals, deposits, PIN changes, and more at over 2,300 ATMs across Canada. Get the ATM locator app at keepyourchange.ca. You want this back up your nose?
I'll use the exchange.
Keep your change. Use the exchange.
The Mayworks Festival offers a medley of artists and performers across the GTA. May 5th to 13th, with live music, spoken word, theater, film, visual arts, and more. Mayworks highlights include the band Dub Trinity, writer Michelle Landsberg, renowned artist Louise Lilyfeld, musician Evelyn Perry, and many more at the Mayworks Festival. Info at mayworks.ca.
Drive was incredible. Thank you. We're just $2,000 away from reaching our goal. So if you still aren't a member, now's the time. Go to www.ciut.fm and make your donation by PayPal or credit card and be entered into the 6 grand prize draws. Help CIUT 89.5 FM stay strong for another 25 years. We can't do it without you. CIUT 89.5 FM, from the roots up, 25 years and counting.
From the roots up. CIUT 89.5 FM, broadcasting live 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. From Hart House, University of Toronto.
Welcome back to Career Buzz. I'm your host, Mark Franklin. Before continuing our interviews with Reinika Lengel and Franz Myers, I want to let listeners know there's an amazing amount of career stories in the Career Buzz archive. We've had guests like Terry O'Reilly from CBC's Under the Influence, Neil Sandel on the theme of youth unemployment. You can catch hundreds of these interviews if you go to the Career Buzz link at careercycles.com. So I'm going to continue on with our conversation. My guests today, Reinika Lengel and Franz Myers, they're both joining us from Edmonton. Reinika teaches at Athabasca University. Franz Myers teaches at the University of The Hague in the Netherlands. Now, Franz, I want to shift over to the conversation about career learning and vocational training conversations. You've been doing some research on this, about focusing in on especially secondary students, their career wishes or career identities. And I was amazed at how little career conversations are actually happening, how poorly these conversations are happening, which your research highlights. Can you start us off here? What is going on? What is the problem?
The problem is that we still have, in sociological terms, we still have an industrial educational system. It is an educational system that is, how you say that, working for, is developed or designed for the industrial society. And in an industrial economy, it's all about mass production. But we are... Nowadays, we are in a service and knowledge economy, and a service economy means that employers require students or new employees with well-developed hands, head and heart. So they need to have a good skill set, they have to have a lot of knowledge, but most of all, employees are needed who really love to do their jobs, because in a service economy, it's all about delivering tailor-made and or personalized services. So employers need otherwise qualified students, but the educational system still is absolutely industrialized. So they have an industry, an old 20th century culture, and that means that That old educational system was designed to select students, not to qualify them for real concrete jobs. That qualification was done on the first or second job, so on the labor market and real job. So the educational system is absolutely monological. It's all about an exchange of knowledge against order, for order. So it's absolutely monological, and teachers are unable and also most of them unwilling to dialogue with the students. So they don't have the skills to dialogue, but also they have a professional identity that is absolute. In that identity, it's all about to be a good teacher is to deliver, is to teach knowledge, to give knowledge, and not to dialogue with your students about their experiences.
So
that's the reason why we absolutely find no dialogue at all in our research.
It is astonishing to see what you found in the Dutch educational system. Let's zero in on this idea that you call it a career wish or a career identity, which hopefully the education system helps to foster, but doesn't. First of all, what do you mean by a career wish or a career identity?
What I mean, most of the time I say a career identity, because what I already explained, it's in a service economy. It's all about delivering tailor-made or personalized services, and that means that an employee really has to love his or her job and also have to feel strong feelings for the company within you are working. So you really have to have a well-developed heart, and that's all about identity. You have to identify with your job and with the company you are working in, and that's the heart of a service economy.
Now, in one of the articles that you published in 2010 here, astonishingly, you say that the more traditional forms of career guidance, and this would, I think, apply to Canada as well as Holland, but the more traditional forms of career guidance, such as conversations with a guidance counselor and career guidance tests, do not noticeably encourage students to use career competencies.
Exactly.
So before we get to the solution, and I know you've done some research on what does work, or at least what looks like it's much more promising, it's amazing to see that the things that we think work, these career guidance conversations that we hear all the time, and you can hear high school students here complaining about the fact that they didn't have effective career guidance conversations, or they did one of those tests, usually an interest inventory, that tries to match their interests with career options, and often people walk away with that with, you know, less than important insights. Why doesn't this work? Why is it persisting?
It doesn't work because you only can build up identifications. So you can only develop your heart on the basis of real-life experiences. And schools don't offer real-life experience with work. So that's the reason why it doesn't work. It's so persistent because of the industrial culture of schools, and attached to that with the dominant professional identity of the teachers in it. So they really believe they do a good job when they transfer knowledge, but they aren't interested and really they don't think it's part of their job that they have to guide students to develop their own life stories and their own career stories.
Exactly. So now let's move towards some of the things that you have found work that actually do work about these kinds of conversations, about the qualities of those conversations where we're listening. And surprisingly, in your research, I saw these examples. You actually have transcripts of stories where the listener does no listening at all and just inserts themselves into the conversation. What actually works? Experience and conversation works. How does it work?
It works because, first of all, the only way to build up a career identity, so to develop your heart towards specific jobs or towards specific occupations, it all starts with experiential learning. Without experiences, absolutely no learning process. You have to have real-life experiences. But an experience as such, most of the time, it's you don't learn much from it. There is a lot of research, not only in the Netherlands, but also here in Canada, that shows that when you are on placements, most of the time kids only learn to develop their hands, almost not their heads and absolutely not their heart. There is no time on the shop floor to have time for that kind of stuff. So what a placement as such or a real-life experience only works, and works, I mean, only give a chance to start a learning process when somebody is asking you and seducing you perhaps, or at least inviting you to talk about what you experienced and what the and to talk about the meaning, the personal meaning and also the societal meaning of your of the experiences you have with real life work.
So it's those two pieces of the puzzle, that, and you come on strong in your research about that experience, and then some kind of effective conversation to kind of draw out that individual and to hear what they felt about it, what they liked, what they didn't like, and so on. That seems to be the key piece of it, and yet this is something that isn't happening.
Exactly.
We're talking
Because it is not a conversation teachers normally have with the students, but because normally they have a monological conversation. They tell students what to learn, what to do, how to do it, and where to improve. But what I said earlier, it's a conversation is needed where you help students to find, together with them, the right words to describe their experiences. And meaning is never obvious. Meaning has to be constructed, to be discovered in a dialogue.
We're talking here to Franz Myers of the University of The Hague. He's here in Canada right now, in Edmonton. And also on the line is Reinicke Langel. I'm your host, Mark Franklin, on Career Buzz here on CIUT 89.5 FM, also worldwide on CIUT.FM. We have put comments or questions out to listeners. You can email me at mark@careercycles.com or call us at 946-7000. That's 416-946-7000. Franz, we do have a question here that came in through the email to you, and I think it's a perfect time for the question, thanks to Heather Bennett. She says, often we think conversations will take more time than we think we have in our time-crunched society. So in the example that Franz gave, this Franz was just before we took a break, of the person who felt the placement didn't go well, about how long was his conversation that allowed the individual to identify the core issues?
Well, that's a difficult to deal with, because conversations, a dialogue, always takes more time than a monologue. But that's on the first side. But on second side, when you talk to students and you experience as a teacher, you experience soon that they don't get what you are saying, they don't learn, you have to repeat it, to repeat and to repeat it over and again. So all teachers know that every piece of theory has to be repeated in 1 year at least 5 times in order to get students at least that has some of the stuff into their long-term memory. So in a more distant perspective, you see that a dialogue is cost-effective, I think, and time-effective.
Good. So that's a good place to start. And I think that now we can move towards the kinds of conversations that work. And I wonder if you could help us out here. I know you've identified these three different kinds of conversations or positions that the listener has. Number one, ignoring the position. Number two, repositioning by talking on behalf of the student. And then finally, number three, broadening I positions.
Mm-hmm.
So you've got these three different ways. And, you know, I think listeners, anybody can be a career helper. Anybody can talk to their friends, their kids about these things. Sometimes we're career professionals, and I know we have some listening today. Other times we have listeners here maybe having these kinds of career conversations. What can you share with us from your research about how to have these conversations so that we're not ignoring and we are inviting this experience?
So the by far most important thing is that you are, as a teacher or as an advisor or as a parent or as a friend, that you are really interested in the experiences of a student. And there is only one measure that is absolutely clear when you are really interested. That means that you can listen to the emotion and that you are interested in the emotion. And what we find time and again in our research is that in career or placement conversations or career conversations in education, teachers almost immediately ignore emotions of students. When it is a positive emotion, they only say, well, good, well done, or good to hear that. But as soon as there comes a negative emotion, they ignore it completely. They don't know how to handle, they are not willingly to handle it. So the alpha and omega of a real career conversation is that you not only listen to the emotion, but also try together with the student to formulate or make it the emotion more concrete. And from there on, when a student has described a concrete experience and the emotion she or he felt, then you can broadening that by going to you can ask a student then when she or he has described this emotion, you can say, well, did you feel that same emotion in a comparable situation, or did you feel it in other situations? So you can broadening it up. And most of the time, when you listen very carefully to emotions, when you give a student the opportunity to describe as fully as possible the experience with the emotions in it, then, and when you then help the student to compare it to other situations, most of the students in vocational education, and that are not the brightest students most of the time, so most of these students are very able to see themselves new patterns arise. And when they see a new pattern, that's what Reinicke talked about earlier, then they see suddenly they start to understand what's happening. And then the outlines of a second story come up.
It's great, you know, to talk about that. And I think anybody who's listening to this really gets what you're talking about. It just seems like a really... a big thing to start to shift and change the way education, and not just education, because this is true for all of us who have careers, but especially in the education system, to move towards one of experience and then this kind of conversation. So just to bring this part of the conversation to a close, Franz, can you tell us, is there any pilot project, is there anything real in the world that's going on now that's starting to implement some of these different approaches that you've described?
Oh, the beautiful thing is, perhaps not a project, because that's too early. Schools are in a big transition phase now, and what we see in the Netherlands as well, in Canada, as far as I understand, is that financial cutbacks and so force schools to stuck into their first story, as to say so, to stuck into that old industrial role. But what we all know is that in every school there are teachers that have a natural talent to talk with students, not to talk to students, but to talk with students. And what you see in every school is that there are already practices, concrete practices between the between brackets, good teachers and students, where you can see that real career conversation, that modern career conversation, you see it in practice there.
Yeah, so some of it's already happening, which is really encouraging to hear, but lots more needs to be done, it sounds like.
Yes, so, yes, we need some structural changes here, I think, or not structural, cultural changes, I mean.
Let me bring this part of the interview to a close. I have one more thing for the show here, and I want to speak to Angela Fitzpatrick, who I have in the studio, and I'm going to invite her in a moment. So, Franz and Reinicke, can I ask the both of you briefly to reflect now on all of the things that we've talked about in your personal stories, because we did start talking in the beginning of the interview about your personal stories and how you came to be doing what you're doing. And what's one thing that you can share with listeners personally that you've learned in your own careers, that you've learned from the twists and turns and the things that you've done in your own careers? And what's one thing that you can share with listeners about what you've learned? Franz, can I start with you?
Yes, what I learned, it won't be surprising, I think, that I trust much more on intuition than I ever did before in my life. I really, most of the decisions I take now are absolutely intuition-based and not cognition-based, and I'm happy with that.
That's great. Thanks for that. And Reinicke, from you, what have you learned that you can share with listeners?
Well, actually, what I was thinking, I wanted to quote David White, a modern-day poet who I greatly admire, who works in corporations, too. He talks about reviving the soul of America and such. He's a Yorkshire poet, and I just like to read just one sentence that he said just to sum up for me, and that's, life is a creative, intimate, and unpredictable conversation, if it is nothing else, spoken or unspoken, and our life and our work are both the result of the particular way we hold that passionate conversation.
Beautiful. David White, that's White, W-H-Y-T-E.
I've
heard him speak on the topic of career as a pilgrimage of identity. A brilliant brilliant guy with some amazing applications of poetry into making career and life choices. So thank you so much for joining us today on Career Buzz, Reinicke Langel and Franz Myers. I'll put links to your sites on the Career Buzz link at careercycles.com. If listeners want to find out more, they can connect with you. I think you each have your contact info on your websites. Is that right?
Yes, that's right.
So I'll make that connection. Thank you so much for joining us here on Career Buzz.
Okay.
Thank you, Mark.
Thank you. So we've got a couple of more minutes left in the show here before we wrap up at noon. And I wanted to introduce listeners to Angela Fitzpatrick. Hi, Angela.
Hi, good morning.
So Angela is going to actually be hosting next week's show. So Angela and I have been talking a bit about that. And she's got some really interesting stuff lined up for next week's show. But what interests you in hosting a radio show, Angela?
Well, actually, the guest who's actually coming on the show was a big part of that. And next week's show is all about the art of conversation and powerful conversations. And I had such a conversation where somebody asked me, if I wasn't doing what I was doing today, what would you do with your life? Or what would your dream be? And I've always had this secret dream to be on the radio. And so I actually verbalized it, and an opportunity came about, and I met you, and now this is upon me. So it's fabulous.
That's a great story, you know, and it doesn't have to be in some huge way. You know, people have dreams, state their dream. I think we've heard a little bit about that from our guests today.
Absolutely. And it's funny because I think back to the guidance counselor that at one time actually tried to guide me as to what kind of career path I should take. And at the time it was science and math, which is, if somebody were to ask me about my passions, is completely opposite from that. So it's very interesting.
Isn't it amazing? Mm-hmm. And in a nutshell, what's going to happen on next week's show?
So Stuart Knight will be joining me. He's actually doing a very interesting event tomorrow called the Top 10 event, where he's actually bringing together 10 dynamic people to talk about the 10 things that they would, or 10 tips or things they should know before they die, which is a very interesting topic. So he is an entrepreneur. He has wrote a book about powerful conversation, and I'm having on the show to talk about some of his tips, some of his, and talk about his book.
Great. He actually was a guest on Career Buzz a few years ago. It's going to be a great show. So listeners, do tune in. And Angela, thanks so much for joining us here briefly today. Look forward to hearing your show next week.
Thank you.
We're just out of time here, so let me wrap up the show by letting you know that you have been listening to Career Buzz, Canada's unique radio conversation that empowers lives, enriches careers, and energizes organizations here on CIUT. I'm your host, Mark Franklin. You can find out more about me at careercycles.com.